how are you? It is 7 minutes past 7 o'clock on a Sunday night. That would be p.m., not 7 a.m. My name is Susie Jones, filling in for Geraldine Steele tonight. Jonathan Lowe at the helm. Jonathan, so usually I'm rolling in about, if you ask Charlie, probably 5 minutes to 7 a.m. Yes, ahead of the health show.
This is 12 hours past your normal work time.
That's right. Yes. But you know what? It was kind of a nice day. I had all day to get laundry done and get food ready for the week and get my house tidied up. Went to a little birthday party. So it's super nice to be here in the evening with you, because we used to hang out more when I worked a little different shift on Sunday. So it's fun to be with you.
I have missed I've missed my time with one Miss Susie Jones.
And we had fun with Geraldine Steele back in the day.
Absolutely.
Kick it around a little bit at 7 o'clock. So that's what we're going to do tonight. We're going to have a lot of fun.
Yes, absolutely we are.
We're going to tackle some serious topics, but we're also going to tackle some fun stuff like, dun, 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 dating in your 60s. How about that? There's a little. So we'll find out what's going on in that whole world with a good friend of mine, Kaylin Rosenberg, will join us a little later.
We leave no age bracket unattended to.
We do not. We are an equal opportunity dating venue. Who knows what will happen? Want to mention, folks, you are a meteorologist by trade. We got some snow coming in. We want to let folks know what a kind of a double dose. How does it look on those models that you look at?
So, first of all, the models that I look at, they've probably got dust on them. I need to probably, go get the dust off because I haven't looked at them in a while.
Mm.
But looking at what the other meteorologists in town see.
And the National Weather Service.
Yes. So we're going to get basically a few waves of low pressure coming through. And these storms are going to come through tomorrow, Tuesday, and then the big one is going to be Wednesday and Thursday. So we could get, between now and probably Tuesday night, Wednesday overnight, going into Wednesday morning, we could get maybe an inch or two. But the big storm is supposed to come through Wednesday in the day and last until later on Thursday. And from what I was hearing yesterday, it could be one of those light, fluffy snow events where it piles up real, real nice and real quick. It doesn't sit like a heavier snow does, so that could help pile on the snow total, which is not the best thing. But again,
say the snow total, because I saw a couple numbers and
I don't want to that brings it in. That brings it into my mind, and I don't want to bring that into my mind.
Come on, bring it
into
your mind.
I have heard possibly in some areas up to a foot and a half.
Oh my goodness sakes! So we're just finally seeing our driveways. I think someone showed a picture of their grass on their front lawn on Twitter recently. That's all going away.
It is. And again, have to remind people, it is still February.
I know.
It is still winter. Mm. And I was talking with Rob Dreisline, who hosts the Outdoors show that we now have on from 5 to 6 on Sundays. And I said, my time here, I've been here now for 15 years. I have now grown the knowledge that I do not let my guard down until until Memorial Day.
I think I have had a snowstorm in April at my daughter's birthday is April 21st. I think I've had kids over having a party and they've left with snow on the ground.
I remember distinctly one year, it was maybe 2010, 2011. I was driving over from the place where I still live over to one of the grocery stores in the area, and I got out of the car. It was May. I want to say it was May 4th. It was early May, and it was snowing. And I walked out of the car, and I had said to myself in a low scream, it is snowing, and it is the beginning of May.
Right.
What are we doing?
Right. That's a real gut punch. We want to make sure listeners know at any time tonight in the next – how late am I here? 11 p.m.? No, people can join in. If you want to come on the air and say hello to Jonathan and I, you're always welcome. That number is 651-461-9226.
I will say this. Keep in mind, though, we do have scheduled guests throughout the entire show, so it will be if we do have a moment or a spot to get you in, we will try to. But we do have a lot of guests scheduled tonight.
We do. We do. And 651-461-9226 is also a number that you can text. So if you want to say hello or ask a question while I'm interviewing someone, please feel free to jump in. That is our City's One Plumbing Talk and text line, 651-461-9226. I want to let people know our first guest coming up in after this quick break. You may have seen it in the news. Dominion Voting Systems filed a lawsuit against Fox News, and apparently some text messages from the cable channel's primetime hosts, among others, were released to the public. And they were startling, I think is a good word, perhaps.
I think a great word for it would be spicy.
Spicy.
It was spicy.
Well, we're going to share some of those with you. And we're going to talk to a professor at the University of Minnesota who knows a lot about media law, about media. And we'll talk about the ramifications of this lawsuit and what's alleged and what Fox says after this quick break on News Talk 830 WCCO. It is 17 minutes past 7 o'clock on a Sunday night. You're listening to Steele Talkin'. Geraldine Steele is out tonight feeling a little under the weather. We wish her the very, very best, and we thank you for being part of the program tonight. A few clouds out there, 30 degrees. It was a pretty nice day, so hopefully you enjoyed it as we just mentioned. The weather expected to change this week. Also, this past week, Dominion Voting Systems lawsuit against Fox News grabbed some headlines after text messages from the cable channel's primetime host and others were released to the public. Those messages show a contradiction between how the host privately felt about the election fraud campaign pushed by then-President Donald Trump and what they publicly said to the nightly audience on the air. And what does this revelation mean for the impending lawsuit? Will this hurt or help the Fox host in the long run? What does this mean for journalism as a whole? That's what I had. That was my first question. To help answer some of these questions, we've invited Jane Kirtley, the director of the University of Minnesota's Silas Center for the Study of Media Ethics and Law. She joins us now on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Good evening, Professor. Thank you for coming on with us.
Pleasure to be with you.
Well, I've had the opportunity to meet with you in person over the years, and you are truly a gem. You are incredible in terms of information. And I, first of all, in reading this story, when I read it, and then I heard that you were coming on, I thought, I have to ask her gut reaction, your first impression when you read some of this information and what you thought in your heart professionally.
Well, let me tell you what my immediate reaction was. I've been following this lawsuit from its very beginning, and I've always thought that Dominion was going to have a very hard time meeting the actual malice standard, being able to show that Fox knew or had reason to know that what it published was not true, because so much of the lawsuit is based on the commentary by pundits, and I figured it would be protected by the opinion privilege. When I read this 192-page filing, I was stunned, because I can't say it's a slam dunk for Dominion at this point, but they have made an excellent case that, in fact, Fox knew, or at least certainly should have known, that a lot of the stories that they were telling about voter fraud simply were not true.
Let's go back for just a minute. So let's go to the election. Let's let our listeners know what happened that night and what has been revealed in this lawsuit. So the election is over. President Joe Biden has won. And what's happening at Fox Network and what got us to this point?
Well, part of what was happening was that there was a real divide, I think, between what I would call the traditional news side of Fox and the punditocracy. The news side were saying, it really looks like this is a win for Joe Biden, that Mr. Trump has not prevailed. And, you know, we're getting ready to start calling it for President Biden, soon to be President Biden. And meanwhile, the people that are on the commentary side are getting emails and phone calls from people in the Trump campaign that are trying to convince them that, in fact, massive voter fraud has occurred. And they're skeptical. They're saying, They're calling these people names. They're calling them idiots. They're calling them people that are really off base. And then comes the word that some of the Fox faithful viewers are turning away from Fox and going to alternative sources like Newsmax, which are still repeating the Trump campaign's version of events. So there are flurried emails and conversations among the Fox management about, well, what should we do? We're losing our viewers. How do we get them back? And the answer is to give them the information they want to hear, that what turned out to be the false information that they wanted to hear. So, I mean, all this didn't happen that very first night. It happened in the next few days as the allegations became greater and greater from the Trump campaign that there had been massive voter fraud. But what the theme I see through all of these documents is that essentially the people in Fox, from Rupert Murdoch on down, knew that there had been no massive voter fraud. And there were people within the management who were saying to the commentators, you've got to stop giving space to people like Sidney Powell, one of Trump's lawyers who was peddling this information. And even some of the hosts themselves, like Cavuto, were saying, I can't in good conscience let her continue to talk, referring to one of the president's spokespeople, because she's simply not telling the truth. So there was this tremendous conflict going on within the organization and even among both the news people and the commenters themselves about how best to address this situation. But what is pretty clear to me is that never at any time did anybody there really believe that there was massive voter fraud. And one of the questions was, why did they allow people to come on their shows and say that was true when they knew that it wasn't?
To me, as a news person, I feel like the ramifications of this are great. And maybe not. Maybe we have become such a dulled society that we don't really care anymore. But it seems that authentic journalism based on the facts, where is that? You know, you have, and I think that Donald Trump, I really believe this, that he sullied the waters when, you know, fake news, and then you have Fox with this situation. So it does kind of, does it not shatter your confidence in what's real and what's not real?
Well, nothing has shattered my confidence in what's real or what's not. But what I am concerned about is what appears to be a coordinated effort on the part of Fox in the days immediately following the last election, or rather the 2020 election, to peddle a false story primarily for ratings when they knew it was false. Now, one of their responses in their papers has been they had to allow spokespeople for the Trump campaign to come on and talk, that was a matter of importance for the public. And they've even argued under a theory that isn't accepted by most states, but it is a theory that says that there's a value, it's called neutral reportage, in allowing authoritative people to be heard, even if you disagree with them, even if you have reason to know that what they're saying isn't true. And they are arguing that if Dominion wins, they're going to be stopped, and other news organizations will be stopped from publishing people that are taking controversial viewpoints. But I honestly don't think that is what is going on here. Nobody's saying you can't have controversial people come and express their opinions. Opinions, the U.S. Supreme Court says, can neither be true nor false. We count on other people, other facts, other statements to outweigh opinions that are mistaken or ill-informed. But what you can't do is tell lies, to represent facts in ways that you know are not true. And in that sense, there's nothing new about anything that's going on here if you just look at it from a legal perspective. But what I'm seeing here is a very clear case of an extremely cynical approach on the part of Fox. Again, assuming that what is in these documents is accurate, Fox insists that Dominion cherry-picked comments and took them out of context. We may have to wait for the trial later this year to find out which a jury is going to believe.
Our guest is Professor Jane Kirtley, Director of the University of Minnesota's Silas Center for the Study of Media Ethics and Law. We are talking about a lawsuit that was filed by Dominion Voting Systems against Fox News, dealing with the information that was coming out post-2020 Trump-Biden election. I understand as well, Professor, that the amount of money that Dominion is seeking is also apparently being called into question by Fox and kind of wanting to know, is it $1.6 billion they want?
Yes, yeah. Yes. Well, and of course, one thing that always needs to be remembered in any lawsuit is that the figure that you put in as your damages is somewhat of a speculative figure, and who knows whether a jury would ever award that. They'd have to find liability in the first instance, and we're a long way from that as yet. But you're right, Fox is taking the position that Dominion was never worth anywhere near that amount of money, and that part of their argument, that is Dominion's argument, is that the reporting on Fox discouraged a number of states from purchasing and using their voting system. So therefore, they lost money. And Fox's position is, you never were going to make that much money. But, you know, that to me, that's ultimately a detail, because I don't think Fox could really argue that Dominion's reputation was not harmed by this reporting. The question is going to be how much, and again, if Fox has the legal liability going forward.
How much damage has been done because of this?
Well, if we talk about in terms of the public perception of the integrity of our elections, if you'd asked me this question before our most recent 2022 election, I would have been inclined to say this is, if not fatal, a very serious blow to the public perception of how our system operates. If people can't trust that casting their votes is secure, that their ballots will not be counted, that's a death blow, I think, to democracy. Fortunately, I think in the last election, to a great extent, the public's confidence was restored by that. So if we're talking systemically, I think we dodged a bullet. If the question is, what about public perception about the news media? Well, as you said, there have already been attacks on the credibility of the news media going back, certainly even before Donald Trump, from both the right and the left, political left, who have said the media can't be trusted, that the media are cynical, and that their only goal is to make as much money as possible. The story that's coming out about what Fox was doing here certainly doesn't do anything to displace that perception. And I guess the other question is, will Fox loyal viewers believe any of this? My guess is that for the most part, they won't. They'll see it as fake news, and they'll continue to go back to Fox. So how that plays out in the long term, I don't exactly know, but I'll certainly be watching this case with a lot of interest as it goes forward.
I imagine we all will, and I believe it's in April that the trial begins in this case. Did you read
that's
that?
That's when it's scheduled for. Of course, there's always a chance that the parties might settle in advance, and speaking from a media lawyer position, I really wish they would settle this case, because I always think, no matter how strongly I think one side is right or wrong, there's always a risk that damage will be done to the First Amendment if this case goes forward to trial. And, of course, eventually it might even end up in the U.S. Supreme Court. And I am not sure I want these questions to be decided by the High Court anytime soon.
As the court is made up now. Professor, thank you so much. Is there any final thought that you'd like to share, kind of reflecting before we take our break here and say goodnight?
Well, I guess I would just say this, that it's really important for the public to realize that this was a highly charged situation, and the relationship between Fox and the Trump administration, I think, still needs to be fully assessed and understood. I think for most news media in this country, they would still argue that their role is to serve the public first, not any political interest. So we'll kind of have to see how that's developed as this case goes forward.
Thank you so much for being part of the program tonight. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
All right. Again, Professor Jane Kirtley, Director of the University of Minnesota's Silas Center for the Study of Media Ethics and Law, with us on News Talk 830 WCCO. The time right now is 7:30. Good Sunday morning. It is 7:30. See, I did it. I knew I might do it. Jonathan Lowe, Susie Jones, filling in for Geraldine Steele. It is not 7:34 in the morning. It is 7:34 in the evening. And I am filling in for Geraldine. She might be wishing she was well enough to jump on if I keep saying the wrong time, but apologize for that. Normally I'm here at 7 in the morning. So more politics for you here this next half hour. The pool of GOP presidential candidates for the 2024 election is officially grown this week. Former South Carolina governor and U.S. ambassador to the U.N., Nikki Haley, has announced her campaign, becoming the first person to join former President Trump in that race. Questions arise, how does Ms. Haley's background as a woman of color make her maybe stick out from others? And which other female or minority candidates may enter the field? To find out where we are with that process, we welcome to the program Republican strategists and former majority leader of the Minnesota Senate, Amy Koch, to the show on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Hello, Amy.
Hi, Susie. How are you? Other than, you know, a little confusion on the time.
Oh, dear. I'm fine. It's nice to talk to you. It was nice to see you the other day. You are, just so folks know, you also do some lobbying work for a number of nonprofits. So we see each other at the state capitol, right?
That's right. Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. I'm part of a lobbying firm now.
Wonderful.
For about 7 years.
Wonderful. Well, let's talk. I mean, you watch everything. You're paying attention to politics. It's your job. What do you make of this Nikki Haley throwing her hat in the ring? And is it obviously historic? Kind of talk about what you see it as.
Well, sure. So, it's historic. It's an interesting first, maybe last move. It's hard to see. Up to this point, while there have been several names bandied about to run against former President Trump for the GOP endorsement, no one's gotten in, right? So Mike Pence hinted at something, Governor DeSantis in Florida, you know, widely speculated that he might throw his hat in the ring, but no one made the announcement. And now former Governor Nikki Haley jumped in. And so it's interesting to see, will this be a head-to-head? Is this going to be at the beginning of, like, so she's got in the water and the water's warm, and exactly what this is going to lead to is a little hard to say. My guess is that it leads to other folks jumping in, but we'll see.
What is Amy,
so that's the first part of it.
Yeah. We'll get into her being a person of color, but what is the timeline, generally speaking, for getting into a presidential election? So 2024, we're at 2023. Well, is there like a time that people start making the announcement, or does it really vary?
It really varies. But when you think about it, you know, a lot of people think, oh, my goodness, it's 2023. You have to jump in, a year and a half. But when you've got primaries that are taking place in January of an election year, which means January of 2024, you're going to start to see primaries. You're going to start to see caucuses. Mm. We're less than a year out. We're about 11 months out. And if you're going to make a serious run, if you're going to gather a team, if you're going to raise the money that's required to be competitive in some of those, particularly in some of those early primaries, which tend to get a lot of attention and a lot of money spent in them, it's not too early. This is about the right time to get in, unless you're, a self-funder. But even, President Trump has been out there, former President Trump has been out there raising money. Mm. And certainly Nikki Haley is not, wealthy. So this is not going to be a self-funded campaign. She's got to be out there and raising money. So this is about the right time.
Is she an interesting candidate for president? I mean, she is an Indian American. She talks about her parents and having her father wear a turban and her mother wear a sari. And, as a Republican candidate, how does that sort of play out? How does her ethnicity play out in that field?
Yeah, I think she's just an interesting candidate all around, right? I'm a big fan of, as a Republican woman, I'm a big fan of, like, conservative women, that have great head on their shoulders. And I've been very impressed with the governor and former ambassador. She led South Carolina, a very, very conservative state, in a way that, definitely there's no one that can, no one can question her conservative bona fides. But she made some moves that were a little out of maybe what people would think would be out of character. So, for example, she led the way to remove the Confederate flag from the Capitol, right? And she said that's a part of our past, but that's not what South Carolina is any longer. She, even in her stepping into the race, she pointed out something that Republicans know, that everyone knows, it's just a fact, but that nobody really talks about. And what she talked about is, I think she said the last 7 of the 8 presidential races, we have not won the popular vote. We have won because we win because the Electoral College is a fact. And if you get you reach a certain number of electors, then you are elected president of the United States. But in fact, George W. Bush didn't win the popular
vote. Good Sunday morning. It is 7:30. See, I did it. I knew I might do it. Jonathan Lowe, Susie Jones, filling in for Geraldine Steele. It is not 7:34 in the morning. It is 7:34 in the evening. And I am filling in for Geraldine. She might be wishing she was well enough to jump on if I keep saying the wrong time, but apologize for that. Normally I'm here at 7 in the morning. So more politics for you here this next half hour. The pool of GOP presidential candidates for the 2024 election is officially grown this week. Former South Carolina governor and U.S. ambassador to the U.N., Nikki Haley, has announced her campaign, becoming the first person to join former President Trump in that race. Questions arise. How does Ms. Haley's background as a woman of color make her maybe stick out from others? And which other female or minority candidates may enter the field? To find out where we are with that process, we welcome to the program Republican strategists and former Majority Leader of the Minnesota Senate, Amy Koch, to the show on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Hello, Amy.
Hi, Susie. How are you? Other than, a little confusion on the time.
Oh, dear. I'm fine. It's nice to talk to you. It was nice to see you the other day. You are, just so folks know, you also do some lobbying work for a number of nonprofits. So we see each other at the state capitol, right?
That's right. Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. I'm part of a lobbying firm now.
Wonderful.
For about 7 years.
Wonderful. Yeah. Well, let's talk. I mean, you watch everything. You're paying attention to politics. It's your job. What do you make of this Nikki Haley throwing her hat in the ring? And is it obviously historic? Kind of talk about what you see it as.
Well, sure. So, it's historic. It's an interesting first, maybe last move. It's hard to see. Up to this point, while there have been several names bandied about to run against former President Trump for the GOP endorsement, no one's gotten in, right? So Mike Pence hinted at something, Governor DeSantis in Florida, widely speculated that he might throw his hat in the ring, but no one made the announcement. And now former Governor Nikki Haley jumped in. And so it's interesting to see, will this be a head-to-head? Is this going to be at the beginning? So she got in the water and the water's warm and, exactly what this is going to lead to is a little hard to say. My guess is that it leads to other folks jumping in, but we'll see.
So
that's the first part of it.
We'll get into her being a person of color, but what is the timeline, generally speaking, for getting into a presidential election? So 2024, we're at 2023. Well, is there like a time that people start making the announcement, or does it really vary?
It really varies. But when you think about it, a lot of people think, oh, my goodness, it's 2023. You have to jump in, a year and a half. But when you've got primaries that are taking place in January of an election year, which means January of 2024, you're going to start to see primaries. You're going to start to see caucuses. We're less than a year out. We're about 11 months out. And if you're going to make a serious run, if you're going to gather a team, if you're going to raise the money that's required to be competitive in some of those, particularly in some of those early primaries, which tend to get a lot of attention and a lot of money spent in them, it's actually, it's not too early. This is about the right time to get in, unless you're, you know, a self-funder. But even, you know, President Trump has been out there, former President Trump has been out there raising money. Mm. And certainly Nikki Haley is not, you know, wealthy. So this is not going to be a self-funded campaign. She's got to be out there and raising money. So this is about the right time.
Is she an interesting candidate for president? I mean, she is an Indian American. She talks about her parents and having her father wear a turban and her mother wear a sari. And, you know, as a Republican candidate, how does that sort of play out? How does her ethnicity play out in that field?
Yeah, I think she's just an interesting candidate all around, right? I'm a big fan of, as a Republican woman, I'm a big fan of, like, conservative women, that have great head on their shoulders. And I've been very impressed with the governor and former ambassador. She led South Carolina, a very, very conservative state, in a way that, definitely there's no one that can, no one can question her conservative bona fides, but she made some moves that were a little out of maybe what people would think would be out of character. So, for example, she led the way to remove the Confederate flag from the Capitol, right? And she said that's a part of our past, but that's not what South Carolina is any longer. She, even in her stepping into the race, she pointed out something that Republicans know, that everyone knows, it's just a fact, but that nobody really talks about. And what she talked about is, I think she said the last 7 of the 8 presidential races, we have not won the popular vote. Mm. We have won because we win because the Electoral College is a fact. And if you get you reach a certain number of electors, then you are elected president of the United States. Mm. But in fact, George W. Bush didn't win the popular vote the first time. The second time he did. Mm. Certainly we did not. President Obama won handily, right? Hillary Clinton won the popular vote. And her point was, like, Republicans, we can't, it's not sustainable, right? And we don't have a majority of Americans supporting us. And we have to get back to that, which is something we just don't talk about.
And Amy, on that note, because that is a great question, that the Republican Party itself, you know, you look at least sort of looking at the big picture, that when the Bushes were in the White House, the father and son, and other Republicans, they were, at least in my opinion, I have no idea if I'm saying this right, they were a different brand of Republican than former President Trump and some of the more far-right conservative members of the party. Is it possible to get someone who's more of a Bush presidency, like a Nikki Haley, or is it have to be to the far right?
Well, I hope not. I hope that we can come together and decide that winning and leading is more important than sort of like standing like a rock on a principle that some of us, you know, don't necessarily even recognize as conservative. And I've made that statement a couple times about former President Donald Trump. I grew up as a fiscal conservative, as a hawk, a lot of common sense, like national presence conservative. And, mm-hmm. and I didn't see a lot of that in President Trump. And then folks say, well, we can't win anymore. Like, you know, like even in like the state of Minnesota, right? I have Republicans say, well, I just don't think we can win statewide anymore. And I say, well, that's completely and entirely false. We can't win statewide with the candidates that we've been putting up that run in a way that is contrary to, you know, what Minnesotans value. But in the last election, for example, we had a candidate for state auditor, and no one even knows, you know, really what the state auditor does, mm-hmm. But that narrowly lost by 0.34% of the vote. Mm. Our AG's candidate, Jim Scholz, narrowly lost by less than 1% of the vote. Minnesotans can not only win a national, but they can win Minnesota. But it matters what candidate you put on the ballot.
We are talking to Amy Koch. She is the former Senate Majority Leader in the state of Minnesota, also a Republican strategist and a lobbyist. And we're talking about Nikki Haley jumping into the presidential race, but the bigger picture of the Republican Party and where it sits right now going into the presidential election with different factions. So, I mean, even looking nationally for a moment at Congress and Speaker McCarthy and kind of handling the far right and trying to make some continuity, some building common ground within the Republican Party. Are you afraid that it's not possible, or do you really think it is possible to find some unification within the party?
I think it is. I think it is absolutely possible. I'm always remain hopeful. I think that Republicans have to start recognizing that a very small tent of just sort of purist ideology is not going to be something that you can lead from. And, you know, Ronald Reagan, who's often held up as a conservative icon, said that if you're with me 80% of the time, you're with me. And that means that there's a lot of space to move around. Mm. And we as a party, to be successful, have to get back to that. Because sort of the purge that's been going on isn't growing our numbers, isn't growing our reach. And by the way, you know, if you don't like, if you're a Republican and you don't appreciate tax increases, if you're a Republican and you don't appreciate everything that's been happening at the state capitol this year, well, guess what? You don't get to just complain about it. You actually have to work and you have to win, and then you have to lead in a really thoughtful, smart way. And so you don't get to complain about it when you continually put up candidates and support folks that espouse an ideology that just isn't going to, you know, bring in people from different, you know, parts of the state, from different walks of life. If it's a very narrowly focused party, it's just not a recipe for success. So, you know, we've lost the last three cycles of election, really since 2016. We lost in 2018, we lost in 2020, and we largely lost in 2022, which should have been a bang up year for Republicans. But we've narrowly held got the U.S. House, and that's about it. Mm. And so if you don't like that, if you disagree with what's going on in your government as a Republican, well, you gotta look to yourself, right? And what did we do that was not acceptable? And, you know, so anyway, just I think Nikki Haley kind of exposes all of that and begins right. That conversation. And it's one we need to have as a party.
Do you think that former President Trump is got the same power that he once had? Or can you imagine this next year at this time and all the other candidates that are going to be in the GOP field and how he'll manage that? I mean, obviously, the first time he got the nomination, standing on that stage with all those other Republican candidates, Jeb Bush, that it was, you know, kind of astonishing that he got the nomination, but he did with all those sort of traditional candidates. What can you see happening as we get into 2024 with former President Trump?
Well, you know, one thing we all should have learned is you never, ever, ever count out Trump as a possibility. So I would never, ever do that. I do think that there has been, you know, I think when he first ran, there were a lot of folks. Well, there were just some that are just diehard Trump, right? They like that he's tough talking and they like what he, you know, that he kind of calls people out and isn't the traditional politician. Even though some of the things he says they don't agree with. But I think there were even more people that were sort of like, well, you know, he isn't a traditional politician and he is a business guy. And maybe we should give that person a shot. And then, you know, there were so many, you know, like, you know, things said and things done that people found just completely unacceptable, you know, leading up to January 6th, mm-hmm. where the idea was that somehow, you know, the election was stolen and we should, you know, rush into the U.S. Capitol to stop the final vote. Mm-hmm. And I think that so many people, you know, that might have said, well, let's give this person a shot, have kind of backed away from that. Now, that isn't to say there isn't a very, like, still very strong core mm-hmm. of folks that support former President Trump. They will continue, I think, to support him, and how that plays out in an endorsement when you might have five, six, seven candidates. If it's not a head-to-head, if it's not Nikki Haley versus Donald Trump.
No.
Then, you know, then what, how does that play out, right? Which is really the first time around, Donald Trump had about 17%. He had a consistent 17% that was able to carry him through the, you know, the primaries and the caucuses and keep him. And then as people fell out, there was just sort of a natural flow mm-hmm. towards him. And he also, you know, garnered all the attention because he is a clip master. He is a, he gets the media to follow every word he says.
Right.
And, you know, that makes, that's got, he always has people paying attention to him, no matter what he does and says.
I know it, like it or not. Again, Amy Koch, our guest, she's a GOP strategist, a lobbyist, and former Senate Majority Leader in the Minnesota House. Let's go back to the state races again. What do you think of the importance or lack thereof of the state convention? Do you think that, so for example, we go to these conventions and we nominate someone, is it maybe the moderate candidate gets knocked out by more conservative candidates just to kind of make sure that the far right factions of the party are, you know, satisfied?
Well, you know, it also happens on the left, right? So these endorsing conventions
right.
are, you know, the very hard, kind of hardcore activists, because it takes a lot to get to the state convention. You have to go to your precinct caucuses. You have to get elected out of your precinct caucus. You have to go to your local basic political organizational unit convention, the BPOU convention. You need to get elected to the state as a convention attendee from there. And then you have to go for a couple days somewhere in the state of Minnesota, usually Rochester, Duluth, somewhere as a convention center, and spend days in a hall sort of working through with other Republicans that were willing to do that. So it tends to be very, very insider on both sides.
Right.
The difference, I think, with the parties in the state of Minnesota is that the DFL have not abided by their endorsement. Let's mm-hmm. see, last time around, Governor Tim Walz did not receive the endorsement. It went to former representative, now current Senate state senator Aaron Murphy.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to that, Governor Dayton did not receive his party's endorsement. In fact, he was sent away from his convention. And it was former Speaker Margaret Anderson Kelleher
mm-hmm.
that received the party endorsement and then ultimately lost to Governor Dayton in a primary, as did Aaron Murphy, lost to now Governor Walz in a primary.
Mm-hmm.
So the difference is the DFL will endorse, and then the primary voters feel more free for whatever reason. The Republican Party endorsement seems to stick. And or more likely, oftentimes they're not even challenged.
Yeah.
This time around, Governor Scott, former governor candidate Scott Jensen, received the endorsement, and none of the other candidates that ran against him ran in a primary.
Yeah.
So,
interesting. Yeah. Well, we'll have to wait and see and watch how this unfolds. If I have a chance to come on the show again, we'll have you back on. Love talking to you. And we'll see you at the Capitol this week.
I suspect we will, unless we get all snowed out.
Right, exactly. Thank you so much. Again, Amy Koch, GOP strategist and former Senate Majority Leader in the Minnesota Senate. It is 7:51 on News Talk 830 WCCO. Okay, I'm going to get it right this time. Welcome back. My name is Susie Jones, and I'm filling in for Geraldine Steele, Steele Talking, every Sunday night here on WCCO, 7 to 11. And right now, the clock on the wall says 7:55, almost 56 p.m., if you're following along at home. Jonathan Lowe is the producer of the show, along with Chris Tubbs, and they've put together a fine show. We have a lot of more guests lined up for the next couple of hours. Want to remind you, if you're just tuning in, we have a bit of a weather change coming this week, Jonathan, talking about maybe two rounds of this snow, a smaller round first and then a bigger round later in the week.
Yes, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because we had talked about earlier having the, you know, being in winter and having the opportunity in this area to see snow as late as May. And we did get a text that came in online.
Okay.
1994, first week of May, woke up to 5 inches of snow in my front yard. Wait, it gets better.
Okay.
Flew to Sacramento, California, where it was in the 90s, got in my cousin's van and drove to Tulare, California. Tulare is another city in California.
Okay.
Where it was 106 for a birthday party. What a shock to the body. I'll never forget it. And the cousins were quite comfortable. So this person, I guess, in the same day went from snow on the ground to 106.
Oh, my goodness.
Yikes.
So if people are listening and want to share their memories of May snowstorms, you can do that on our text line. Our city's one heating and plumbing text line, 651-461-9226. That music, Jonathan, I'm assuming was a mistake, as I have 1 minute left to fill before the top of the hour when we bring folks the national news and local news here on WCCO Radio.
Forgot how long that music bump was.
Well, we could play it under. It's kind of nice to have a little jazzy note.
I will get you something here in just a couple seconds.
One thing is nice about working with Jonathan on Geraldine's show is that Geraldine has some of the best music bumps. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but man, she just brings it out. And speaking of music and entertainment, don't forget in the 9 o'clock hour, we have Center Stage. A lot of great guests, some musicians, some actors. Rohan Preston will be with us. So much more to come here on WCCO Radio, 758, 30 degrees. Look out. We're in for some more snow. We'll tell you about it in a little bit. Okay, I'm going to get it right this time. Welcome back. My name is Susie Jones, and I'm filling in for Geraldine. Geraldine Steele, Steele Talking, every Sunday night here on WCCO, 7 to 11. And right now, the clock on the wall says 7:55, almost 56 p.m., if you're following along at home. Jonathan Lowe is the producer of the show, along with Chris Tubbs, and they've put together a fine show. We have a lot of more guests lined up for the next couple of hours. Want to remind you, if you're just tuning in, we have a bit of a weather change coming this week. Jonathan, talking about maybe two rounds of this snow, a smaller round first and then a bigger round later in the week.
Yes, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because we had talked about earlier having the, you know, being in winter and having the opportunity in this area to see snow as late as May. And we did get a text that came in online.
Okay.
1994, first week of May, woke up to 5 inches of snow in my front yard. Wait, it gets better.
Okay.
Flew to Sacramento, California, where it was in the 90s. Got in my cousin's van and drove to Tulare, California. Tulare is another city in California.
Okay.
Where it was 106 for a birthday party. What a shock to the body. I'll never forget it. And the cousins were quite comfortable. So this person, I guess, in the same day went from snow on the ground to 106.
Oh, my goodness.
Yikes.
So if people are listening and want to share their memories of May snowstorms, you can do that on our text line. Our city's one heating and plumbing text line, 651-461-9226. That music, Jonathan, I'm assuming was a mistake, as I have 1 minute left to fill before the top of the hour when we bring folks the national news and local news here on WCCO Radio.
Forgot how long that music bump was.
Well, we could play it under. It's kind of nice to have a little jazzy note.
I will get you something here in just a couple seconds.
One thing is nice about working with Jonathan on Geraldine's show is that Geraldine has some of the best music bumps. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but man, she just brings it out. And speaking of music and entertainment, don't forget in the 9 o'clock hour, we have Center Stage. A lot of great guests, some musicians, some actors. Rohan Preston will be with us. So much more to come here on WCCO Radio, 758, 30 degrees. Look out. We're in for some more snow. We'll tell you about it in a little bit.